If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
Another day, another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find them in doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also, a shout-out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with those nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. The Royals lost again last night. Not much of a shock. Didn't think they had much of a chance going into that game, even against a subpar Cleveland team. But Kansas City fell yesterday 8-3. Once again, it was the first inning struggles, and the Royals never recovered from falling behind 3-0 against Cleveland. Now dropped to 16-32 on the season. And, you know, is it even worth getting all wound up? Is it worth truly putting in the effort for another rant about this Royals team, about the pitching staff, about the coaching staff? Honestly, I'm running out of words to say. Because we've gone from anger, a ton of anger towards this organization, to do we even really care about the outcome of this season? If the front office is not going to show us that they truly care about where this team ends up, then it's going to be hard to get the fan base involved and get them to spend money to go out to Kauffman Stadium and watch them lose a baseball game. I mean, 16-32 now, the worst record in Major League Baseball. They would have the number one overall pick if the season ended today. The Cincinnati Reds, who started the season 3-22, now have more wins than the Kansas City Royals. Cincinnati, who started the year winning just 3 of their first 25 games, now have more wins than Kansas City. 16-32, and the reason I'm saying that so much is to emphasize how bad of a record that is. The Royals rank near the bottom in every pitching category. They rank near the bottom in every hitting category. Yet the team sits here, and not much is being done. By the way, they play today at 12:10 in Cleveland, wrapping up a series trying to avoid a sweep before heading home for a 10-game homestand, in which they'll play a dominant Houston team, a powerful Toronto team, and then play a Baltimore team that's better than they are. I'd be shocked if the Royals won more than 3 games on the homestand. No, I think we can start transitioning into the fact of, man, this team really could have the number one overall pick. I've tried to push it off and say there's no way they lose 100 games. Right now they're on pace to lose 108. And I would like to believe, which with how many good hitters historically, I don't even want to say historically, just natural good hitters that are in their lineup, it'd be hard to imagine them losing 100. I mean, Whit Merrifield still is a good hitter. Andrew Benintendi, Salvador Perez should not be hitting the way that he is. But here we are. The Royals have a putrid offense. They have a putrid pitching staff. And not much is being done to correct that. And last night, you know, Daniel Lynch, who, by the way, when Dayton Moore fired, or I guess J.J. Bacol and Dayton Moore decided to fire Terry Bradshaw, they held that press conference in the Royals dugout and talked about where they can go from here, why they decided to make the move, and J.J. Bacol also mentioned, you know, we're still in this race. No, they're not. In fact, they're maybe in a race for the first overall pick in the MLB draft, if that's the race you were talking about. But Dayton Moore, when talking about Cal Eldred and his pitching staff, mentioned, if you're going to criticize Cal Eldred for Chris Bubich and Jackson Coar, well, you better give him credit for Daniel Lynch. Since those words spilled out of Dayton Moore's mouth, Daniel Lynch has an ERA above 9. Do we want to give credit to Cal Eldred for that? Or is that just a odd blip on the radar of Daniel Lynch's career? That is just, yeah, it's going to happen with a young guy. I mean, when is it enough? When are the growing pains, I guess I should say, going to be too much of a problem, too much of a cause for concern? I think Daniel Lynch certainly still has is in the point in his career where growing pains are going to happen frequently, but it's about adjusting, and I think it's about adjusting and getting consistency. Daniel Lynch has no consistency for as good as he really can be. I mean, he can go from giving you 6 1/3, only allow 1 earned run, strike out 7, to being out of the game by the 4th inning. I mean, that's kind of where this Royals pitching staff is with everybody. You know, Brad Keller can give you 7 shutout innings, or he can be pulled in the 3rd. Brady Singer, though he's been great in his first 3 starts, you know, there's probably going to come a time where Brady Singer can't get out of the 3rd. Because that's just the way this Royals pitching staff is built. They don't have enough consistency. And last night, I'd hate to harp on the bad and not really point out the good, because there was a truly awesome story that happened last night with Jose Quas, who made his major league debut, a former FedEx driver. And Jose Quas pitched in the big leagues last night, made his major league debut, and was solid. Threw an inning, didn't allow a hit, didn't walk anybody, and struck out a guy. I mean, it was really cool to see Jose Quas on the mound. If you didn't know much about him going into the year, he used to be a hitter. He transitioned into a pitcher, was released by the Brewers in 2017, fought his way back to the major league level. Actually, not even back. Fought his way to the major leagues because he had not been there before. Keep in mind, a hitter switches to being a pitcher, is a sidewinder. And by the way, I've only seen 1 inning from Jose Quas. I've seen enough. Right, I think that, honestly, Jose Quas could be a weapon in this bullpen, and a bullpen that's not very good, so I don't think it's really putting him on that much of a pedestal, and that's not much of a high bar to climb. But Jose Quas was great, and I think with his angle and throwing 94-95 from a sidearm angle, not even 3/4, a sidearm angle, I think Jose Quas could be one of the better relievers in this bullpen, and I hope the Royals keep him up there for the rest of the year. Why not? If you're the worst team in baseball, record-wise, why not have stories like this make people interested in your team? And like I mentioned earlier, the Royals are back in action. Series finale against Cleveland. Brad Keller will go today against Connor Pinkington, who has a 3.75 ERA, does not have a win or a loss yet on his record. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Connor Pinkington's probably going to throw 6 shutout innings with 8 strikeouts. That's just the way it's been going. But the Royals lineup today consists of this. Whit Merrifield will lead off, play center field. Andrew Benintendi will hit second, play left. Bobby Witt Jr. at short, he'll hit third. Salvador Perez will clean up and DH. MJ Melendez bats 5th and is doing the catching. Hunter Dozier will bat 6th and play right field. Carlos Santana will play first base and hit 7th. Emmanuel Vera, 8th, he'll play third base. And rounding it out and batting 9th and playing second base will be Nicky Lopez. How interesting is this, Marco? Carlos Santana is hitting 7th today. On the season, he has 16 hits. In AAA, Vinny Pasquantino has 15 home runs.
But yeah, that's got to be 16 hits and 20 at-bats, right, Jack? Like Carlos Santana's batting .750 if he's playing every day, right?
Sure, and we need to get him the at-bats, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
We need to make sure that he can turn it around and get some sort of trade value would be my guess. Yeah, he's hitting 7th today. And Kyle Isbell, who drove in one of the Royals' 3 runs last night, not in the lineup.
Probably because he misread that fly ball in the first inning yesterday.
That had to have been it. That might bench him for the next 3 or 4 games.
Exactly.
For being honest.
That puts you right in the doghouse, man. Like, they're not looking for offensive stars on this team.
And keep in mind, too, this is, if you think the Royals haven't already turned the entire fan base against them, the Royals are about to get back Cam Gallagher and Michael A. Taylor. The KC Star put out an article that the odd men out, if the Royals decided to put Cam Gallagher and Michael A. Taylor back on the roster, the odd man out would be MJ Melendez and Kyle Isbell. That's where the Royals would be leaning toward. And if that does happen, keep in mind, if this does happen, I guarantee you Kauffman Stadium will be more empty than it's ever been. I don't think a single person would have any desire to go out and watch a team if the two guys in your lineup that have been providing any sort of spark, excitement, I mean, that's also not including Bobby Witt Jr. Bobby Witt Jr. does provide that. Those guys, the fact that that's the only thing that's keeping Royals fans to turn on the TV at night and watch these games, they're the only reason, right? It's still fun to watch Benintendi and Merrifield and Salvador Perez, even if they are struggling. But the Royals are looking, Royals fans, that is, are looking to the future. You take that away from them, goodbye to any ticket sales you might have had. And also this, I found this to be hilarious. The Royals did a promo the other day, it was during the game, of Royals Firework Fridays. Do you want to know what their slogan was? It's
you're
fantastic.
I don't know what it was. Yeah. Oh, man.
I know it was not intentional, but it's so fitting. It's come for the fireworks, stay for the fireworks. Is that not where we're at this point?
Hey, Houston's in town Friday. Toronto's
coming. Oh, for them to smack them?
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is maybe they meant the other team's fireworks.
Fireworks, yeah. I mean, I can already tell you, when I saw that homestand, even before the season started, I said that is going to be one of those brutal homestands the Royals have all season. Houston and Toronto back-to-back. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. If you didn't think it was bad already, just wait. And, you know, it's funny that we've used the Buddy Bell quote over and over again. Never say it can't get worse. And we all talked about when the Royals were struggling back in April and May that, oh, it could be worse. It could be the Cincinnati Reds. The Cincinnati Reds are better than the Royals now. And the Reds have actively come out and said they've, well, not quoted, but we can look at the Reds lineup and say they're trying to lose baseball games. They're trying to get another top prospect in their organization. They had a few already. They need that number one overall pick. The Royals are trying to win baseball games and just aren't. They're just losing a lot of them, and they're losing almost every single time you turn on the TV. And yet we sit here, Marco, and nothing. Nothing. I'm not even going to raise my voice today. I'm not going to get too up in arms about it because you're getting into the point of where Royals fans or the Royals fan base doesn't want to be in. It's where the front office doesn't want Royals fans to be. It's just sort of becoming disinterested. You don't even care anymore. You're not angry anymore. And that, if you ask any sort of front office, any organization, anybody working in ticket sales, marketing, the absolute worst place to be in is not when your fans are irate and angry. That's honestly showing how much they care. And I think Royals fans can only care to some point until the front office or the owner does something about it. And we can't sit by, we can't sit on our hands and say, well, this is just okay because we did win a World Series title. And Jeffrey Flanagan went on a little bit of a rant last night. He has some of his Flanny rants every once in a while. And he was kind of on the side of, I don't know why everybody wants to kind of look at where the Twins and the Rays and I guess even Oakland for a time period are, because though they're competitive, they never won a World Series. I'd take the flags that fly at Kauffman Stadium forever and then, you know, every once in a while you're just not going to be competitive. Well, I can agree to an extent that the Royals capitalized on a very small window. Not many teams can do that, and the Royals are one of the few small market teams to win a World Series in the last two decades. But overall, when you look at Major League Baseball and what makes it fun is knowing that your team will be competitive. And who's to say if the Royals won 85 to 88 games every single year and they snuck into the postseason maybe two out of every 5 years or three out of every 5 years, would you not take that knowing every summer – you can go to a game in June, July, and August and know the Royals have a chance to make the postseason. It's a common debate of, do you take what the Royals did right now, where they won a World Series and haven't had a winning record since? You know, some teams would kill for a World Series. You know, Cleveland would absolutely kill for a World Series right now. It's been, we're coming up near, I mean, it's still going to be two decades away, but the Cleveland Guardians / Cleveland Indians are nearly 100 years. I think it's 1947. So 25 more years. If they went 25 more years, they'd reach 100. 100 years without a World Series title. The Cubs had the what? 108 years without a title? I mean, that's how long, more than a lifetime. More than, for some people, two lifetimes. But the common debate is, where do we sit? Do we just kind of sit on our hands and say, well, because the Royals won it 7 years ago, I can't expect too much because this is how small market teams operate. Well, what is preventing the Royals from being the Minnesota Twins or being the Milwaukee Brewers? What is preventing them in a small market to being that competitive? And you question, you go, well, You know, is it free agent acquisitions? Is it, you know, they can't sell enough tickets? Is it their drafting? Is it who's running their organization? Is it the coaching staff? What is it? Because there shouldn't be any reason why a small market business team like Kansas City can't be competitive. They should not be the doormat of Major League Baseball for two decades at a time. Even if they win a World Series, right? It's great to win a World Series. Not many teams can say that, and not many teams in the last decade can say they've won a World Series. The Yankees haven't won a World Series since 2009. They can buy their entire roster. They never run out of money. I get that. But there's also different ways you can build your organization. You can build your team. Look at how the Rays do it. Look at how Oakland does it. Oakland has a bunch of guys you may have never even heard of. They have a better record than the Royals. The Rays, they know how to develop pitching. They find diamonds in the rough. They also draft very well. The Royals from 2010 to, I mean, if you want to say a couple of guys have hit since then, I can give you that. I mean, Sean Manaea was one of the biggest hits for the Royals. But they've also had some guys that first-round picks that never even made it past high A. I mean, that's the evaluation process that has hurt the Royals for years, and that's why we're where we're at. It's not free agent acquisitions. It's not the coaching staff. It's who the Royals drafted for the last decade and a half. They didn't always get the best product. They didn't always get the superstar player. I mean, you go down the years and who the Royals drafted and who went behind them, I mean, it's shocking. It's absolutely shocking that the Royals, though they couldn't have passed on, I mean, let's start with Bubba Starling. I think Bubba Starling was 2010, maybe 2011. I think it was the 2011 MLB draft. Let's go down the line here and wonder why the Royals can't be competitive. So the 2011 Major League Baseball draft, Gerrit Cole went number one. Bubba Starling went fifth to Kansas City. Now, going back to that point, there was no way the Royals could have passed on Bubba Starling because on the off chance, Bubba Starling went elsewhere and succeeded to an incredible extent, the Royals would have looked like idiots that a guy in their own backyard thrived somewhere else. And it's very possible Bubba Starling could. We know there are some guys that find success in other organizations once they leave the Royals. But the Royals decided to take Bubba Starling fifth. Anthony Rendon went sixth. Francisco Lindor went eighth. Javier Baez went ninth. George Springer went 11th. Let's see who else you could have got. Sonny Gray went 18th. I mean, going down the list right there in the first round, I mean, those are probably the guys I would say. There are a couple other guys in there you could definitely go with. Like Jose Fernandez, though, rest in peace, he went 14th overall to the Marlins. I mean, another one of those guys that, if he was still pitching, he would have been one of the best pitchers if he was still in Miami in the National League. So there you go, 2011. The Royals took Bubba Starling. Let's even go to 2010, because I always go back to the Bubba Starling draft because I know a lot of those players that fell after Bubba Starling. But this is what we're going over right now is who the Royals took and why they're in the spot where they are now. And this kind of comes down to our Vinny Pasquantino debate of the scouts that are evaluating who is ready and who is not. Well, these may be some of the same guys that are making the draft picks in Kansas City. So, in 2010, the Kansas City Royals, though I'm not going to knock this pick enough because he was a large impact in winning a World Series title. Christian Colon went fourth to the Royals out of Cal State Fullerton. You go down the list here. Yasmani Grandal went 12th. Chris Sale went 13th. The Royals also could have had Christian Yelich, who went 23rd overall to the Florida Marlins. And again, back then, Christian Colon was seen as one of the better college hitters. He wasn't a high-slugging college hitter, but he was just a guy that hit for average, and the Royals viewed that as a very valuable piece. But in the end, it didn't really work out the way the Royals had envisioned a fourth overall draft pick of going. In 2012, the Royals took Kyle Zimmer. They also could have had Max Fried at 7. They could have had Andrew Heaney at 9. They could have had Lucas Giolito at 16. They could have had Corey Seager at 18, Michael Walker at 19, Marcus Stroman at 22. Jose Berríos went 32nd in that draft. Joey Gallo went 39th. Lance McCullers went 41st. Now, again, those guys are probably not slated to be high-round draft picks, but that's kind of thing. The Royals had bombed a lot of their top five draft picks, and that's what sticks with you forever. When you miss on your top five draft picks, there's no excuse for it because those are supposed to be your high-end can't-miss prospects. Now, the MLB draft is a crapshoot, right? Some guys just don't pan out, but the consistency of not panning out has hurt Kansas City in the long run. The 2013 MLB draft, the Kansas City Royals took Hunter Dozier, 8th overall. They could have had Austin Meadows. They could have had Dominic Smith. They could have had Hunter Renfroe. They could have had J.P. Crawford, Tim Anderson. They could have had... I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it out. Well, Aaron Judge went 32nd overall.
It's painful, isn't it? It
is very painful. They did take Sean Manai in that draft, which was one of their better first-round competitive balance round picks they've ever had. They flipped him for Ben Zobrist, but first-round pick, 8th overall, they went with Hunter Dozier. A lot of other guys went after him. Aaron Judge went 32nd overall to the New York Yankees. Now let's go to 2014. I mean, you tell me, Marco, when you can give credit to one of these first-round draft picks. 2014. Now, one of the biggest shocks is Brady Aiken was taken first overall, and that's considered one of the biggest misses, I think, of all time in first overall picks, and that's from Houston, and Houston almost never misses on their picks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, just you go back, talk about the opposite of what the Royals were able to do. Houston
hit on every damn pick. Carlos Correa was in 2015, I believe it was.
Yeah, that was the, the Royals draft that year. Playoff hero.
Brandon Finnegan.
Not Finnegan. But
Finnegan was, I believe Finnegan was taken in 14. Yep, the Royals took Brandon Finnegan at 17. They could have had, let's see if anybody would have been worth it. Matt Chapman of the Oakland Athletics.
Good name.
Luke Weaver, who's now at the Diamondbacks. They also took Foster Griffin in the first round, who's on the Major League roster right now. Could have taken Michael Kopech, who went to Boston. Jack Flaherty, who's in St. Louis. They could have also taken, you know, we'll leave it at Chase Val. I think it's Valo was his name. I think it's Valo. But three picks the Royals had in 2014 in the first 40, and none of them have panned out to be much at the major league level. Now we go to 2015, Marco, and this might be one of Dayton Moore's biggest misses because he just simply never really panned out, even at high A. So in 2015, when we weren't even thinking too much about the Royals draft because they were coming off a World Series appearance. So in 2015, the Royals took Ash Russell, and Ash Russell never really made it above, I want to say, double A. But Ash Russell went 21st overall. Three picks later, the Los Angeles Dodgers took Walker Buehler. I'll just leave it at that. 2016, who did the Royals take? And I think I know who it is. I believe it's Nolan Watson. And once again, we weren't thinking too much at the time of who the Royals were taking. In 2016, the Kansas City Royals, if I can find it here on Wikipedia. Man, they even have a pick in the first round that year. I think they picked, oh, wow. They didn't pick until, I don't know how this would be able to work. I guess 67th overall, unless I'm missing somebody and I'm hopping over it. It was A.J. Puckett, pitcher out of Pepperdine. Puckett hasn't done much since then. I feel like they picked before that. I want to say it was Nolan Watson in the first round, but I guess I can't find it.
Wasn't Puckett the kid, too, who retired early? Or
yes.
Yep, took the break from baseball.
So A.J. Puckett. Yeah, so I'm not seeing the Royals in there. So they picked 67th overall in the 2016 MLB draft. Then 17. Now, this may be where things started to turn around for the Royals. 2017, the Royals took Nick Prado. So I'll give him that. 2018, now we know with Brady Singer. They also had Daniel Lynch, Jackson Kowar, Chris Bubich around that same time frame. Then 2019, you took Bobby Witt Jr. 2020, you took Asa Lacy, who still to this point is kind of struggling to find that rhythm. And then in 2021, you took Frank Mozzicato. So from 2010 to 2016, the Royals did not hit on a single first-round draft pick. And we can give credit to Christian Colon and Brandon Finnegan to bringing an American League pennant and World Series title to Kansas City. We could say that, but when you look at where they're selected, they can't just be seen as like rental guys that two hits or three hits. And I think Christian Colon will always be able to fly under the radar of being a missed pick because of what he provided. And I stand by that. Same thing with Luke Hochaver. Luke Hochaver went 1-1 out of Tennessee. When a Dayton Moore, I want to say that was, it wasn't Dayton Moore's first pick, I don't believe. Or Hochaver might have been an 07. So I think it was. So Hoch went 1-1 and never lived up to 1-1 potential, but still brought a World Series title. So that's kind of where the Royals sit, though. If you kind of understand what I'm saying here, Marco, the Royals fan base and the front office kind of have the same idea that we look at players like that and say, well, they won us a World Series title, so it doesn't matter. And I get that. Winning a World Series title is incredibly tough in Major League Baseball, especially for a small market team. But it's also the idea of, Well, that shouldn't excuse the pick in itself. I'm not blaming the player that if you get picked there, you get picked there. And you get hurt. Maybe you can't find consistency. I get all of that. But the Royals front office has this idea of, well, we will consider those picks good picks because they helped us win a World Series title. And where some other organizations would say, no, that pick did help us, but they were not anywhere near where we expected them to be. And from 2010 to 2016, the Royals had very few everyday major league contributors. In fact, their World Series team, the best player on their team, wasn't even drafted by the Royals. It was Lorenzo Cain. Alcides Escobar, their everyday shortstop, not from their team. Ben Zobrist, not from their team. Here you go, Johnny Cueto, not from their team. Now, Hosmer, Moose, Perez, they were homegrown guys. But you look at the rotation, Eddie Volquez, not from their team. And the Royals get that content, complacency, whatever you want to say, and they sort of live in the past. And they say that, well, those are the golden years. We're going to do it the exact same way. Well, you can't. Because the Royals somehow, and I mean somehow, got incredibly lucky by getting to back-to-back World Series appearances, winning one of them, without drafting well for 3 years leading up to it. Now, the Royals just hit on a lot of their free agent signings, and they just all meshed well together. And they one of their two biggest trades in franchise history, arguably two of their biggest trades, trading away Will Myers and Odorizzi to get James Shields and Wade Davis, and trading away Greinke to get Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar, Jeremy Jeffress, and Jake Odorizzi, who they later flipped. But it's those are two trades that worked out as good as they possibly could have for Kansas City. But since then, the Royals haven't hit on many of their trades or their free agent acquisitions. It's just sort of to a point now where we look at this is the state of Royals baseball, and it can't change because the same voices are going to keep making those same picks. And though I'm not going to blame the player for not panning out, that's just who the player might be. They may not have been in the best situation. You got to take a look internally. And I'm done ranting, yelling, raising my voice at what's on the field right now because the Royals put themselves in the spot. And we can be up in arms about not calling up players. Well, there's nothing we can do about it as media, as a fan base. You can't just keep barking at the front office because they're not going to do it until they're ready to do it. And John Sherman, you can't bark at John Sherman to say, well, do something. It's on his own accord. He's the one that can do it. We can't sit here. Nobody's going to convince John Sherman to do what the fan base or some of the fan base wants him to do because he's not going to listen to that. He's going to listen to other guys in the front office who will tell him what's the smart move to go from here. That's just kind of the state of Royals baseball. So I urge you all just, I guess, to care about the team, care about where they're going, and want them to be competitive. But I think now we've run our course and getting angry about the same things because they're just not going to change until eventually they do. It sounds stupid to say. That's all it really is. We can scream until we're blue in the face. It won't change until the Royals front office or John Sherman does something about it. And clearly, the outcries, the social media outcries, it hasn't worked to this point. If that's a way to cope with the losing, go ahead and do it. But I feel like at this point, I'm not even going to raise my voice anymore about the Kansas City Royals. When we come back here on The Shift, we will continue our fun stretch of sports movies. Do they hold up today? You are listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Some cool things to go over before we get into our sports movies. John Madden will be on the cover of Madden NFL 23. There will be three different covers that you can get of John Madden. And what a great way for Madden to honor the Madden, the video game, to honor the late John Madden, as he used to be on all the old video games. So why not? And it feels like the perfect time to do it. And honestly, the covers are badass. I love the covers in this because I think one of them, I want to say the cover of Madden 23 will be the exact same cover that it was in Madden 2000 or the first Madden. The first Madden was what, 90?
Oh, man, there goes back to 95, 96?
95, 96, yeah. So this one, I believe, was the same cover as, I don't want to say Madden 01. I think the first ever, I got to go to all the Madden covers now because I'm hooked on this and I should have looked this up before we came back from break, but this was the same Madden cover.
So it goes back to 1988.
1988?
Yeah. John Madden Woo. Football is what it used
yep,
to be called.
Yep, that's right. So Madden 2000, or this is the same cover as, gosh, maybe they haven't had this same cover. I thought they'd used a former cover for this, but No, they haven't.
No, so let me find the... So the ones that I've seen so far, so one of the covers that's going to be available of the three is the first Madden. The one with him with the long blonde hair,
yes.
holding the football with his right hand right in front of his chest. As far as the other two covers go, I don't know if they've been on it or have
been. Quick trivia for you, Marco.
Yep.
Can you name who was the first player on the cover of Madden? It's 2001.
Titans running back?
Uh-huh.
Eddie George.
Nice.
Yeah.
This we should have made this a trivia game as if you could name.
Oh, you don't want to do this with me.
All righty. How about this? 2002. Don't say you don't want to do this with me and then not get 02.
Marshall Faulk.
He was 03.
Ah,
I loved 03. 03 might have been one of my favorite Madden games growing up. Minnesota Vikings quarterback.
Oh, okay. Culpepper.
Yep. 2004.
Ray Lewis.
You're going 1-2. Ray Lewis is 05. 04 is a transcendent player for Atlanta.
Oh, Young, or Vic, excuse me,
yep.
Young.
I don't Vic, know to... this one also was my, this might have been my favorite Madden game, 06.
Ray Lewis, I already said Ray Lewis. After him was McNabb.
Yep, McNabb, and then I won't go all the way down the line here, but 07.
That's Sean Alexander.
08.
Vince Young.
Nice. I think I've hit your wheelhouse right here.
Yeah, because 07, 08, and 09 were some,
yeah, I wouldn't expect you. I mean, the fact
I played
you,
a lot of Madden.
I was going to say, you nailed it. You got the play. Like, you got the ones that were just 1 year later. So if I had said name every Madden cover guy, you probably would have gotten it, maybe missed one or two. 09 was Favre. 10 was Troy Polamalu and Larry Fitzgerald. 11 was Breeze. This one, to me, I can't get over how hilarious this is. 2012 was Peyton Hillis. And if there's ever been a one-hit wonder, I did this on my show at Sports Saturday, the biggest one-hit wonders. We landed on Josh Gordon, by the way, because he had one of the most incredible NFL seasons of all time and hasn't even had 1,000 yards since then. Peyton Hillis is another one of them. 13 was Calvin Johnson. Madden 25 was Barry Sanders. 15 was Richard Sherman. 16 was OBJ. 17 was Gronk. 18 was Brady. 19 was Antonio Brown. 20 was Mahomes. 21 was Lamar Jackson. And 22 was Brady and Mahomes. But now, for 23... it will be John Madden. Now we are going to get into our continuation of sports movies. Do they still hold up today? So I'll bring in Marco for this. And now, you know, now that we had the Madden train going, I feel like we're going to have to dedicate one of these segments in the summer to just breaking down and doing a power rankings of each of the Maddens. Maybe we can do it with NBA 2K and NBA Live as well. Maybe MLB The Show. But I think we can start with Madden as we get closer and closer to training camp. But Marco, to ring it back in, we're going to continue our movies of Do They Hold Up Today? And I'll ask you if you've seen them before, because that we did make the mistake last time that you hadn't seen one of them. I can't remember which one you hadn't seen. It was one of the baseball movies, I believe.
Oh, baseball? I thought it was one of the football. I hadn't seen Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights you hadn't seen.
No.
Okay, we're going to start with this. The Blind Side. The Blind Side came out in 2009. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 66%. Metacritic, 53%. Sandra Bullock played Leanne Tui. Quentin Aaron played Michael Orr. Jay Head played SJ. Tim McGraw, I think, was in this movie as well. Tim McGraw played Sean Tui. Lily Collins played Collins. Does The Blind Side, 13 years later, still hold up in today's cinema?
Yeah, I think so. Sandra Bullock won an Oscar for it. I really enjoyed The Blind Side from the first time I watched it. It's one of those football movies that I like to go back and rewatch. It was always on ABC Family. I always tuned into it when it was on there. I know there is some problematic things that are in it. I'm not the best film critic as far as where it's if it still is a movie that stands as far as the world we live in now, the cultural effect of it. But as far as the movie itself and the sports movie, and just kind of if you're watching it with your heart, not with your mind, I think it still stands true because it's a very wholesome movie. It's a very It's a heartwarming film. You get to see a kid go from broke to riches in a span of a year. Not a year, I guess. Riches, not his term as in money, but as far as just a life-changing, his life trajectory just changed in a matter of a year, being brought in, playing high school football with Michael Orr, speaking of Michael Orr, here, getting an opportunity to play at the college level, and then we see what happens. He turns it into he turns it into an NFL career. So yeah, I think it's a movie that still stands up. I don't think it's one that I wouldn't change the channel on if it was on TV. I liked it.
It's on Netflix. I just watched on Netflix about maybe a month and a half ago, and I agree with you. I think it still does hold up today. Man, is it just an emotional, sad movie? Gosh, I think back then when I was younger and I watched it, I didn't really get the emotional tear or that takeover when you're about to cry. And I'm not trying to admit that I nearly cried watching The Blind Side, but damn, does it make you nearly shed a tear every single time? Because number one, it's a true story. Now, again, you got to take into account that Hollywood sometimes amplifies the situation, you know, and Michael Orr has come out and say, well, there were some things that weren't exactly true. Like, I did have some football experience, and they made it seem like in the movie that I had no idea what football was, and I just turned into this 5-star Division I prospect that was getting recruited by every single SEC school. But overall, yeah, I think it's a great movie. Sandra Bullock's great in it. Tim McGraw, by the way, is a very good actor for football movies. He was also in Friday Night Lights, the movie. He plays that really mean dad for, I believe, Sean Billingsley is his name. He plays the fullback on the team. But Tim McGraw, I think every time there's a football movie that takes place in Texas or the South, we found our dad for the movie. And Tim McGraw is almost always in it. And he's, for being a singer, he's kind of like, he's not to the level where Jamie Foxx is. Like, Jamie Foxx, I think, is one of the most multi-talented people in the world, and nobody talks about it. He can sing, he can act, and he can dance. And he's very well-liked, and he's funny.
Mm-hmm.
He was, I want to say, I mean, he's not one of the funniest people I've ever seen, but also, I think in terms of his show, you know, being in certain movies. I mean, and he's got a wide range of movies, too. Like, Django Unchained, he's also in Horrible Bosses.
Yeah, that's right. He played
MF or Jones.
Uh-huh. Now he's in the Yellowstone spinoff with his wife, Faith Bill. She acts as well in 1883. Yeah, it's a really good cast. You fall in love with SJ, the car wreck scene tears your heart out. But you know what they were going to buy that day?
Oh, they were going to buy the new Madden game. How about that?
Uh-huh. Yep. So just a lot of it's a real feel good movie.
But also really it kind of touches on the booster idea, because the Tuies were boosters for Ole Miss, and they bought him a nice car. And they really, because back then I didn't think too much about it when they're like, oh, did they really take him in because they wanted him to go to Ole Miss? They saw him being a prospect, and they touch on that in the movie. But in the end, Michael Orr still made a career out of himself. And yeah, that's still one of the better true stories in football movies and sports movies, I think, that I have seen. Now for this one, I think we kind of have the same opinion on this, so I'm not really sure why I'm asking this, but Any Given Sunday with Al Pacino, Oliver Stone, Dennis Quaid, Jamie Foxx, again, we just talked about, Cameron Diaz, James Woods, LL Cool J, Lawrence Taylor, and Jim Brown, a 1999 film. I watched it for fourth or fifth time, I want to say, about 3 months ago. It was on HBO Max, so if you haven't seen it yet or you want to see it again, it's on HBO Max if you have a subscription. I mean, gosh, that rivals it. I don't know if anything will rival Remember the Titans for me, because that by far and away is my favorite football movie, if not one of my favorite sports movies of all time.
Yeah.
But Any Given Sunday is so well done and really brings in the professional aspect of football, because I don't think there's many good NFL type of movies out there. And the fact that they have a lot of former NFL players in this casting list, like they have Jim Brown as one of the coaches. I think he's a defensive coordinator in that movie. Lawrence Taylor is like the best edge rusher in the league. And he acts pretty well in it as well. Then they have guys like LL Cool J and Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx playing Willie Beeman, the backup quarterback. But they kind of have this, I guess, great idea of what the NFL would be like, how agents are handled, how, you know, prima donna players act, how guys that are really beaten up and need pills and shots every single game. That's the cool part about the movie. And there's some comedic humor, but there's also a really just good storyline of it. That what it, the league is not the NFL. It's like the, I want to say it's the AFL. It's the type of the AFL because they're the Miami Sharks. And it's not like they just created the Miami team because some movies do that. They'll have regular NFL teams and they'll just throw in the made-up team where all the cast is on. But this is like the AFL and the Miami Sharks were battling for attendance numbers with the Miami Dolphins. So it gives that cool aspect of, you know, Cameron Diaz, she wants to, I guess, force Al Pacino's character, the head coach, I want to say his name is, what is it in the movie? It is Tony D'Amato, forgot. He's trying to get him to retire, he's old, and Cameron Diaz was the daughter of the owner who had died. It's just a great movie all the way around. Dennis Quaid is great as Jack Rooney, and the movie is the first starting quarterback, then gets hurt immediately in game one of the first scenes of the movie. James Woods is the doctor, and he has a hilarious scene really early on, right as Dennis Quaid's character gets hurt, and their backup quarterback gets in, and he gets hurt, and like as they're taking Dennis Quaid in the locker room, he's like, oh, I want to say his name. It's not Tug in the movie. Let's just go, his name was Tug, because I know there's a guy named Tug in the movie. Like, oh, Tug's down too, and he goes, how'd he hurt himself, falling off the bench? And then that's where Willie Beeman has to come into the game because he was the third string quarterback. But man, I watched it. I was thrilled. It's a long movie, I'll tell you that. It's nearly 3 hours, I want to say. But I say that it holds up today. Would you, have you seen it, or have you seen it?
Any
been a while.
Sunday? Yeah. No, it still holds up today because it's a very, whereas The Blind Side, very, you get real life thrown at you, real life situations. And it's a very heartwarming story. Whereas any given Sunday, that movie makes you want to get back out on the gridiron and rip someone's head off type of thing.
It does.
That's a football movie right there where it makes you want to throw on the pads and it motivates you. So, but yeah, it still stands true to this day it does well for today. And then of course there's lots of many speeches, lines that you can grab from that and throw into a motivational type of video montage.
Al Pacino has one of the best sports movie speeches of all time in that.
Exactly.
Inch by inch, play by play, that's how winning is done. Yeah, that movie is, I think, football-wise, easily top five. All right, lastly, we'll end it up with this one, then go to break, and then come back with some fact or fiction. I got some strong opinions about this movie, and I know it's not going to be popular. Angels in the Outfield. 1994 comedy, hour 43 minutes. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 32%. Metacritic gave it a 44%. Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays Roger Bauman. Is it Bauman or Bowman?
Bowman,
I think it's Bowman. Danny Glover plays George Knox. Mm-hmm. Milton Davis Jr. plays JP. Matthew McConaughey's in this movie, too, and I completely forgot about that. Tony Danza plays Mel Clark. Matthew McConaughey plays Ben Williams. Christopher Lloyd plays Al, the boss angel. I'll start it off with you. Marco, thoughts on Angels in the Outfield? Does it hold up today?
It was one of my favorite baseball movies growing up as a kid. JP, poor JP, man. Kid was such a sweetheart. And then I enjoyed it because you got these foster kids that are in love with the sport of baseball. The Angels are down, looking for trying to find a way to switch up their season and get into the playoffs. It's not the best baseball movie out there, but I think it's enjoyable for what it is. But you don't hear about it as much as like Rookie of the Year or those type of silly kid baseball movies.
I gotta say, I was not a huge fan of Angels in the Outfield.
It's
so cheesy for me. It's literally so cheesy, and I get it that for the waving in the wings you can probably see on Facebook Live right now. Marco's doing. I just can't look at that movie and take it seriously. And I get it's a kid. It's just like Rookie of the Year. Like I'm semi a fan of Rookie of the Year with Henry Rowan Gardner because even back then it's funny as a child, right? It's you and I growing up. You watch the movie and you're like, you know, this is fun. I'm a kid playing baseball. This would be awesome to be either pitching in the big leagues or have the help of Angels in the Outfield. But when we talk about holding up today, I mean, when I watch it now, and I think most people watch it, they're like, man, gosh, that movie was cheesy. Even with Matthew McConaughey, I literally had blanked that he's in the movie. He's the center fielder, I believe. But like how the Angels help them in the outfield and have them make diving catches and bring them, I'm like, come on now. Like, it's not just like a little bit of aiding. It's like they're literally picking up the player and throwing them like 40 feet in the air I'm like, all right, let's dial it back a little
moving
bit.
Moving the baseball all around.
Yeah, I'm like, I get that part. Like, maybe it's like do some backspin on it, and it's going to look weird, but it's a fun children's movie. But for me, I just don't think it holds up, which is why it's not talked about a lot or shown a lot on TV since then, because I think it just kind of fit that niche of like mid-90s kids sports movies. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, there's a lot of people I've talked to that's like Angels in the Outfield was their favorite baseball movie growing up.
It was just cute, but I get it. I don't know what Glover was doing adopting both of those kids. He was way too old at the end to be adopting two children. But I got to go back and watch it as an adult, but as a kid, I had it on VHS.
All righty, we're going to take a quick one-minute break, and when we come back, we will quickly wrap it up with some fact or fiction. You are listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We're going to wrap up the show with some fact or fiction. Five questions, five takes in under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, fact or fiction, the Royals lose 100-plus games this year.
Oh, boy. I can't be that type of media talking head that says, well, they won't lose 100, they won't lose 100, they won't lose 100, and they keep losing. I say, well, they're going to lose 100. I told you so. I'm not going to do that. And gosh, losing 100 games is so damn hard. Like, you have to forcefully lose 100 games. You have to be that bad. And I just can't believe with confidence that once the Royals bring up the guys they should, they'll be that bad where they lose 100 games. Now, right now, they're on pace for 108. They're going to come very close. I'm going to put them in the range of 97 and 98. Now, I've jumped from, I want to say, like 85 to 88 losses to 90 to 92, now to 90 or 94 to 95, now to 97 to 98. Man, if they go on another bad stretch, I'm going to have to say that they will be over 100. But right now, I'll say fiction, not over 100, just that I'm not convinced enough, which may sound bad.
Fact or fiction, the Royals win only 5 of their next 20 games.
Would it shock me? No, not one bit. In fact, I'd take 5 of... I'd take 5 of 20 at this point. We're shooting for the number one overall pick. And at that point, you have to transition into wanting them to win games to, no, I want them to lose as much as possible. Get them experience, the young guys experience the major league level, but we need another Bobby Witt Jr. type of product in the minor league system. So I'm going to go, it's a tough next couple of weeks. So I'm going to go fact. I do think they go 5-15 over the next 20.
Fact or fiction, John Madden will be on a cover after Madden 23.
I think this is a one-time deal for John Madden because you don't want to just sort of make light of it. Like, this is honoring John Madden in the right way. He used to be on the covers. Make him on the cover one more time, then after that, go back to players. So I'll go fiction. Not after Madden 23 will John Madden be on a cover.
Fact or fiction, Mahomes and Allen beat Brady and Rodgers tonight in the golf match.
We'll go match. I think they got certainly more power, but Brady and Rodgers have more finesse. Isn't that very telling to how the players play and their style in the NFL? Mm-hmm. I'm biased. I'll go Mahomes and Allen. I like them more. I'll go fact. I think the young guns win tonight over the old heads.
Lastly, fact or fiction, Justin Watson makes the Chiefs 53-man roster.
So this is so interesting about it. You were gone yesterday, but we talked about Justin Watson a little bit, that Mahomes thinks he's incredibly fast, was underthrowing him a little bit because how fast he was. 6'3 target, played in Tampa for 5 years. I think on a special teams level, I think he makes the roster, which if you could play special teams for Dave Tobe, you can make the Kansas City Chiefs roster. So I'm going to go fact. I think Justin Watson has some spot in Kansas City on the 53-man. There's Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City.